But what they suspect was that when he got affected with COVID, it went to his brain.
Oh my goodness.
So I do not feel shame in saying how he passed.
Yeah.
I don't feel any regret or embarrassment sharing his story. I never had, right. But especially now. And I know a lot of people, even our close friends, were like, what happened? It was because he chose not to say anything at the time.
We are so happy to have Minky Couture as sponsor of Relentlessly Resilient. We both have several blankets to get us and our families through cold winter nights. Minky makes the softest and most indulgent blankets. They make the best gifts too. Visit Minky in store or online at minkycouture.com. I love it.
Big or little, we real quick, right before the holidays, we had an opportunity to do a baby shower for expectant military moms, like 75 of them. And every single mom got this beautiful little infant size. Have you seen the infant size Minkies?
No.
Oh, they're so cute and they're so cuddly in there.
But you know what? I just bought some because my daughter's expecting.
Oh, hooray,
so
Grandma.
I actually bought some, but I haven't opened them yet.
Oh, they're the cutest. They're just, because they're everything beautiful and luxurious, but miniature.
Anyway. And what's not great about that?
I know.
Right?
You've taken something beautiful and made it even better. So
love it.
We're excited to be here and really excited to all of you. Welcome to another episode of Relentlessly Resilient. We are real people here to share real life experiences and the tools we're all developing to move forward so we can live our best lives. I am Jenny Taylor.
And I am Michelle Scharf. Today we have with us Wendy Paul. And for those of you who may not be a foodie like me, Wendy is often on Studio 5 mm-hmm. making delectable treats for us, or great dinner tips, great entree ideas.
Yes.
Wendy, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Okay, well, a little bit about myself. I wrote my first cookbook in 2009. It was 101 Gourmet Cupcakes. And that was probably one of the best things that happened to me, like to get me along this cooking journey.
Okay, I have to ask, how old were you in 2009? You must have been young to be like your,
okay, I'm trying to
your
think
own
how,
cookbook.
Like, what year is it, guys?
I don't even know. I think it's 24. That's 15 years
I'm
ago.
You started the whole cupcake rage in Utah.
Actually, well, I probably contributed to it.
That
book
right
sold like wildfire.
Oh,
yes,
my gosh.
And it was so much fun doing like the book tours, and I probably did 5,000 Costco signings. It was exhausting.
Okay,
but
whoa, girl, you've had a book at Costco.
Like, I know,
that
right?
Is
like
success.
I'm a big deal.
You're right.
You are a big deal.
No, but that's what started my journey. And so I ended up writing a bunch of cookbooks and like a dessert series. So ice creams, cupcakes came first. I did cookies, cakes, cake bites. Those were fabulous.
Oh my goodness,
and
now
it
I'm
just
hungry.
Started propelling me into this whole new life around food, which I've always loved food and cooking with my grandma and my mom.
So that where it started was just kind of a hobby?
Yeah,
and then
just
you're like,
kind
hey,
of a
I'm
hobby.
Gonna write a cookbook?
Well, it's a different story. It didn't just happen like that. My brother-in-law had called me and said, hey, the publisher I work for, we really want to publish a cupcake cookbook because it is all the rage mm-hmm. and we want to get into that market. So do you want to try? And I was like, well, yeah, I want to try. So I went to the store, bought probably, you know, back then like $500 of groceries, which was like two full carts, like mounded carts of food.
Of just flour and sugar
flour,
and creamy
sugar,
things.
Cake mixes, yeah. Powdered sugar, vanilla, butter, probably 30 pounds of butter.
So much yeah. butter.
So that started me along the journey. I submitted the manuscript and I had a contract in my inbox that afternoon. So that's different than writing a book and like finding an editor to do it. It really yeah. happened so quick and so fast. And it has been a joy, a true joy. So then came where I got on Studio 5 and I've been on with them, I'm trying to think, 14, 15 seasons.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
Yeah. I think 15 seasons.
So kind of just from then. I mean, you published the book and here we are.
Yeah, published the book and here we are. So 9 cookbooks later and a wellness program, that's what I do.
Surely you have a website where I can find all these great things.
I do. My website is wendypaulcreations.com. Lots of great recipes. I'm all about easy and full of flavor and something anyone can do in the kitchen.
Was it last year you went to Greece or 2 years ago?
2 years ago, I went to Greece as a retreat chef, which has morphed now like into my career as I'm a retreat chef. And I'm actually heading to Australia and New Zealand just in a few weeks.
Oh, so amazing. So
and you show up for like a couple weeks at a time to somebody's retreat.
Yeah, so people can hire me. Hint, hint. If you run retreats, message me. I'm happy to check it out and see if our schedules match and if I can help you with that. It's wonderful. It's like the best job I could have ever imagined for myself. Honestly, I am doing what I love every single day.
Do you also do catering or more just the on-site stuff?
I do catering, mostly catering for like friends and family, or I have like people who've seen me on Studio 5 have messaged me and I'm actually doing an event next week. So yeah,
before I leave on this trip.
So I've actually got events every single week leading up to New Zealand. So
my goodness. So do you have like a massive kitchen in your home? Do you have a business site? Like,
I
where
have
do
a
you
massive
create?
Kitchen. That's where I create, and I just use all the things. So Instant Pot, stove is going, oven's going, grill is going.
Okay,
I have to ask, on the inside,
are you a messy cooker or a clean cooker?
I was messy at first, but then it took me hours. Yeah. So I've really learned to clean as I go. Mm. So I try to clean every step of the way. So at the end of the day, you don't have 4 hours of dishes to wash.
Because I sometimes will be that person where I'll be like, okay, we are going to bake this, cook that, saute the other. And then pretty soon
I'm like,
I'm never doing that again because, oh my gosh, we've just used every dish in the house.
Yeah, every dish in the house and every surface is covered. Uh-huh. Yeah. I am better. Okay. I had to learn how to do that.
So that can be done. Do you have a new book about that? How to clean while you cook? That might be the next tips.
That could be something.
Tips for a chaotic cook or tips for the chaotic kitchen. Like I have seven kids. And so even just dinner at my house on a regular day looks half like
it's
Thanksgiving.
Chaos. Yeah.
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 I'd love to come cook with you one day and just be your sous chef and help you and get some tips about cleaning as you go.
And if you're really good, I should bring you to a retreat, Michelle.
I would love that.
And I'll be your guest speaker. Surely you need a speaker at the retreat. I will speak for food.
I will write that down. We'll make that happen. Okay. Yeah, we will make that happen.
Sounds amazing.
Oh, but clearly there's more to the story than beautiful cupcakes and a clean kitchen.
There is a lot more.
We're here today to maybe have a little more serious conversation.
Yeah. So I know Michelle said that she saw a post I did back in September. My husband went missing and he was having, I would call it a mental health crisis for sure. That's how I would label it. And backstory, should we start at the beginning?
There's no better place to start.
The beginning was in January of 2022, we got COVID. And he actually started showing some symptoms a few days before I tested positive, but his symptoms were different than the normal. They were insomnia, paranoia, anxiety, depression. He couldn't sleep. He didn't want to eat. He couldn't sometimes even form sentences or put things together.
Kind of sudden onset?
Yes, like an instant onset. He stopped sleeping. That was the first thing. And then within a few days, all these other things were happening. And then I got sick, and of course, I could hardly get out of bed. And so he's trying to take care of the children and me, and he's not sleeping and can't focus. And I remember a friend bringing food over, and she didn't want to leave. Like, she was afraid to leave because I was so sick, and he wasn't really making a lot of sense. And so I started to feel better, thank goodness. But before I was even better, I was then taking care of him and the children, and then they all started testing positive. And thank goodness their cases were mild. It was really just me recovering, but then also worried about Brian because he was having so many insane symptoms that I had never
seen. That doesn't sound like flu and COVID and several of the other things going around.
No, it doesn't. And so I would say probably like Valentine's Day. So it had been a few weeks now, like 3 weeks out. They were just progressively getting worse and he still wasn't sleeping. And so his doctor gave him some medication to help him sleep, but he would only get a few hours a night, if that. And so he was struggling to work. He was struggling to function. The pacing was just crazy. He couldn't settle himself down. It was hard for him to have conversations. And this continued on for, well, let's say months and months and months. So in May, our primary care physician, they really didn't know what to do. So they had started him on like an antidepressant to see if that would help. They really didn't know what triggered it. They were just like baffled. Mm-hmm. So she gave him a new medication, Seroquel, to help him sleep. And that he slept almost for a week.
Whoa.
Straight. He would wake up, we'd have conversations, or he'd take a shower and he'd go right back to bed. And I remember tucking him into bed multiple times a day. And he was finally sleeping. Wow. So for me, I was like, oh, okay, so maybe this will end things, right? Maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe this will get us back to normal.
We hear about the value of sleep, right? You're thinking, if he could just get some sleep, maybe this other psychotic anxiety, whatever is going on.
So did he have any type of history of mental illness or anything where they jumped into an antidepressant or something like that?
No, he started becoming very suicidal in that beginning phase. In fact, I would say he was very suicidal for about 8 months from January till about end of August.
How did this impact his ability to work?
Well, he worked for quite some time, but then in April, he had to step back and say, I can't do this.
I can't.
And so from April till that following October, he did not work.
Wow.
And that was really hard. Any man will tell you that that really hurts their self-esteem. It hurts them as a husband. He couldn't provide for us. He was so sick. So that was like a whole nother facet to the illness, right?
Mm-hmm.
Once he started sleeping, that was good. Like he started tremoring, almost like ALS or MS or Parkinson's. So that's what gave me red flags. We need to see a neurologist. We need to go to a specialist. Let's see if we can figure this out. Well, little did we know that that was like an 18-month wait time.
Oh my goodness.
Because so many people were having issues because of COVID and because of the lockdowns and because of all these other things, everyone had just been exacerbated.
It created so many things.
It was so chaotic at that time. And I remember thinking, 18 months? This could kill you. Like, how are we supposed to do this without help from a specialist? So we fought with our insurance company. I learned a lot about health insurance and what they are responsible to do when you pay your premiums. We tried therapy, and he never could quite make that work. And I think it was because his brain was just not fully connecting. So in June-ish, I remember thinking, okay, so we can't get in. We're on all these waiting lists for therapists, for psychiatrists, for neurologists. What could we do next? Like in my mind, I'm all about, let's make a plan and let's just start crossing things off.
Right.
I am very determined, and I have been my whole life, which is probably a big gift for me right now, because when he was sick, I was like, nope, we're going to do this. We're going to do this. And I just was making
lots of persistent.
Yeah. Just trying to, I had to advocate for him. He couldn't do it. And so I was the one to do it. And I was like, you know, he's my husband. Of course I'm going to do this for him. I'm going to figure this out. You know, that was like my goal.
Also, I'm sure you're missing having your husband.
You know what? I did. I was grieving our relationship probably from that very beginning in January because it changed him so much. And he became very codependent, which we had never had our entire marriage. Mm. And so it was a different dynamic. It was a different situation. It was hard. It was so hard, as you know, Michelle, to see your husband sick.
Right.
And wish there was more you could do. And then there's nothing you could do.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's a whole nother level of grief that you have to do while your spouse is ill.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot happening, taking care of the kids, making sure he's okay, working, still doing all of my commitments that I had. I mean, it was really, really chaotic, but I'm really grateful that I'm strong enough and determined enough. I was able to do what I needed to do during that like survival mode,
right?
You know? We asked anybody we could think of for a favor to get him into a neurologist. We tried several people who had connections with hospitals or neurologist department or knew the head of a hospital. Whatever it was, we made the call and asked if we could get him in. We were showing them video of him not being able to walk. We were showing video of him tremoring. And no one could really get us in until we got a hold of one person. And he made the call. And we got into a neurologist within a few months. It still took a few months.
But not 18.
But not 18. So I do feel blessed and like eternally grateful for that person who made that call, who got us in sooner. We know with the trips to the ER, there just wasn't a lot of information they could give us. Once we got into the neurologist, they started just doing all of the tests around the brain. And the thing with neurologists, bless their hearts, they know so much, and yet there is so much that is not known about the brain.
Right.
I had no idea that's what would happen. I thought we would get in, we would do a round of testing, and they'd be able to diagnose him super easy. We'd have a treatment plan or stuff we could do, and we'd just start working as hard as we could to get his life back. And it was more, okay, well, you don't have MS. Okay, well, let's do this test. Okay, well, now we don't think you have Parkinson's just yet, but we would have to watch you for a little bit longer and see what other symptoms would come to pass. So it's a lot of process of elimination. And that's the worst thing to hear when your husband is sick. So he doesn't have something yet, but we have to wait a little bit longer to see if the symptoms change, or if something else is negative, then that's how we figure out what's going on.
Wow.
So as he was having, MRIs with contrast, the spinal tap was the worst because it didn't seal. And so he had to go in for a blood patch. And I've never seen someone in so much pain in my life. And he endured all of that as we're trying to eliminate things and figure out what's going on. I would say October of 22, he kind of seemed to be doing better. He wasn't tremoring as much. He could walk. He was starting to hold conversations really, really well. And I could see glimpses of my husband back. And that was really exciting, but also kind of scary because I thought, all right, when's the nail going to drop? Do I have to brace myself for this? Because they still couldn't tell us really what was happening, except that they suspected that he probably had COVID psychosis.
Oh my gosh, I've never.
Yes.
Okay,
that.
So that's a whole thing.
So this is why I reached out to Wendy and said, I need to know more.
Yeah.
You've been advocating, for those of you that follow Wendy on her social media, she's being very open about this. And it's the first time I ever heard that term. And when I reached out to you and I said, what is this? And she said, Michelle, just Google it.
Google it.
Everybody
COVID
needs to Google
psychosis.
It.
Okay, so he first started getting sick when?
So it was right when we got COVID.
So, but in the 2020, the beginning.
2022.
Oh,
we got it in 2022.
Yeah.
So when you think in the medical industry, the science world, that is new. They do not have enough data to really know what's going on and how to treat things. So in 2022, when the neurologist, we were getting all the testing back and we could see he had inflammation in his body and it was affecting him, but they really couldn't figure out exactly what to do. You know, they put him on all the good vitamins that help your brain. They put him on that sleep med still, so he was sleeping. He had weaned off of the antidepressant and was doing okay. But what they suspect was that when he got affected with COVID, it went to his brain.
Oh my goodness.
So instead of when I got affected with COVID, it went to my chest and I had a really bad,
which
really
is what
bad
most
flu,
of
which most people
default to thinking respiratory.
Right, respiratory,
miserable.
Sore throat, headache, migraines,
body
whatever,
aches.
Body aches. He never had those symptoms. I remember him having a little bit of a stuffy nose, but that was it.
Oh my
it
gosh.
All went neurological for him. And so this can happen with viruses. You guys.
Right.
This is not uncommon. It just doesn't happen very often.
So after she had me Google it, I discovered it can happen with all kinds of colds, flus.
Different viruses
herpes
can
virus.
Show up that
herpes
way.
Herpes virus
I
can
no
do
idea.
It.
Herpes virus, which a lot of people have herpes, mouth cold sores or whatever. Mm-hmm. It can be carried by that.
I had no idea it could become neurological like that.
Yeah. So all kinds of viruses can do this. But this is really coming about with COVID in a different way.
It is.
And
it
a
is.
Third, I think
yeah,
what I read
says,
was a third.
I brought some stats.
Okay, good.
Because I want to know the details. I want to know the information, what the medical community has said about it. So I literally started reading medical journals and pulling articles from India and the UK of different studies to see, okay, well, what's happening and how are they treating their patients? Because we don't really have a plan. A third of patients with COVID develop neuropsychiatric symptoms such as anxiety, depression, psychosis, brain fog, and suicidal behavior. Recently, several cases have been reported as a new onset psychotic symptom, which is what Brian was. He'd never had any of those.
Yeah, no history. No history. It's not like it just got magnified by COVID.
No, there really hadn't been a history. I mean, yeah, when things were hard, he would get a little depressed just like you or I would.
Well, that's
a typical
human experience.
Yeah, it absolutely is. But there was nothing flagging that was a precursor to what happened to him. And that was just published in 2023 of July, so just a few months ago. So we're now just starting to get stats and statistics and all kinds of stuff.
So he's experiencing this before there's even much to learn about it.
He was. Yeah. And so there really wasn't much. I had a couple articles and medical journal papers from like the UK that had seen it, India, and I know even China had seen it in patients. But insomnia was the highest percentage with people who had been hospitalized with neurological issues. That was the first.
Just the inability
to sleep. So he literally lost his inability. He couldn't sleep. Memory impairments, which that man, he could remember anything, anywhere, anytime, dates, places, you name it. He had the best recall. And after he got sick, he lost that ability.
He just couldn't remember.
He couldn't remember. It was like, it was just gone. So
how old was he? Does it say if it affects any certain age?
He was 52 when he passed, so he had just turned 51. Yeah. So, I mean, he's still so young. So young. Yeah. Anyway, so learning about it still didn't really help us figure out how to treat him, except watch him closely is what the neurologist said. You're doing well right now, but I want to watch you and see how you progress.
And this is in the fall of 22.
The fall of 22.
So you've been dealing with it for several months, testing, no real answers.
No real answers, but suspicions and...
trying to survive it.
Yeah, and trying to survive it. And he did really well. He got a new job. He was successful. He loved the job that he got.
He was able to go back to work.
He started in October of 22.
Okay.
And started working. And he was doing really, really well. You know, we had kids going to school, colleges, whatever. Mm-hmm. We had a lot on our plate. Like, you know, we own our own businesses. He works full time as a sales manager and I'm doing all of my food stuff. And so we do have busy lives and our youngest is still only in fifth grade. So we still have a young one. So it was very busy, but we were able to like keep up with it and do it. And then our world kind of came crashing down in April of 23. So in April of 23, he woke up and he wasn't able to, well, let me go back. So I think it was like the 15th or 16th of April. It's funny how dates stay in your mind of all these
that
big
appointment
things.
Or that milestone.
Yes, yes. Yeah. He almost got like a stomach flu, but I never got sick. The kids never got sick. And I kept thinking, well, that was so weird. Like you were deathly ill. But none of the rest of us got sick. Maybe it was food poisoning. I don't know, right? But we'd eaten all the same things.
But you ate the same foods, right.
So I was like, oh, okay. And then he woke up one morning and he couldn't move his leg. His leg was like swollen and hot to the touch. And I was like, what is happening?
That's weird.
And then he had issues with his lower back. Like it kept rotating through to where he couldn't get out of bed for weeks. He could not walk. I was out of town when this kind of all came down. I ordered a cane on Walmart to be delivered and like a toilet extender so he could hold himself up. And I had to come home early, obviously. I was going to, but I'm like, I got to go home and figure out what's happening to my husband. So when I got home, he was kind of doing a little bit better. I told him to start on like ibuprofen. If there's swelling and heat, we need to go in and get blood work. So he did. And they just suspected it was like for being so sick that he was like his body was kind of just reacting. But I was like, that sounds like there's a lot more that could be happening. You know, my determined self is like, that answer is not good enough. Mm-hmm. So we ended up taking him back in and the knee was so swollen, his right knee and above the knee. So into the tissue area was swollen. And I was like, is this like staph infection or is this like something else happening? So they did more blood work and they did a biopsy because they were certain they would find like staph infection. And that came back negative. But then it started moving to like his shoulder.
Oh.
His shoulder would freeze up and he'd have pain. He couldn't lift his arm. He couldn't feed himself for a very long time. We were having to take care of all of his like daily needs. He could not do it himself. And he's a big guy. He's 6'5", 220 pounds.
And just barely, and 50.
Like, and 50, you're 51, 52. Yeah. So I was like, this is just the craziest thing. We ended up in the ER again, which this man had never been to doctors really before in his life. So this was like a whole new thing to have to go in. And I made him go in because I thought a normal, healthy male should be able to recover and should be able to bend over and put his shoes on.
Right.
And we got to figure out if this is like, is this related to the COVID psychosis? Is this something new? Are we just, is your body just really tired? Like, what's happening? So we went to the ER, and bless their hearts, they brought a specialist down, and he actually had to look in his medical journals. And he came down and he said, "Brian, I think you have reactive arthritis." And we're like, "What is that?" And he's like, "Well, we're going to do some more testing, but it's caused by a virus. So the virus gets into your bloodstream and then it starts attacking your joints and muscles. So we want to refer you out to a rheumatologist." And see, I have arthritis. So I'm like, yeah, the rheumatologist is a good next place to start. So again, more waiting.
Right. We can never get into a doctor anymore.
No, you can't get into a specialist
and
as quick as
you
could.
And is your insurance paying for, I mean, you mentioned
so far,
first you've learned
paying,
how to battle.
Yes, because, you know, I was able
to. Because this is expensive.
I was able to say, he needs the doctor and you have a responsibility of duty of care. That's a, you guys remember that. Duty of care.
I'm writing it down right now.
That is the legal term, is when you can't get into the doctor you need, but you're paying your premiums. They have a responsibility to get you in.
To let you go to an alternative provider.
Yes, even to go to a provider that's not on network. They can make it on network for that time frame for that treatment. So we were able to get into a wonderful, wonderful rheumatologist. In fact, I have now switched my care to her.
Hmm.
And I remember her watching him kind of talk about what was happening. And I was trying to let him do it and not overpower him. You know, he's still a human. And he has to say how he's feeling in order to get better. And that's something I struggled with because I'm like, nope, you didn't. Nope, that's not how you're feeling. You know, in my mind, I'm like, you have to tell her everything.
It's the mom.
It is the mom in us. But I was just so concerned.
I think that it's so critical. I mean, they do say that men live longer because of women, right?
Yeah.
Because the men will go and only tell them the smallest piece.
Right.
And we're like, no,
well,
there's,
honey,
a bigger
actually,
picture here.
There's a bigger picture here.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that you're advocating for him is critical.
Yeah, it was critical. And she looked at me and winked. And I was like, she knows exactly what this is. And
she knows
kept
what
talking.
He's not including.
She kept talking. Yeah. And I think she was like, yep, you have a reactive arthritis, but we're going to run a couple blood panels on you and see. And then I'm going to run some inflammation panels on you and see what's really going on. And then I want to do this, this, and this. And we're going to go one at a time and we're going to figure out what's good for you. And so we left the office and I remember feeling like, okay, this could be permanent with him, or it could just be because of the virus. We don't know and we're not sure. It's going to take time to figure that out. Weeks he was working out again. The anti-inflammatories were really helping him, and he didn't have like his full mobility, but he was doing so much better. So that was in, I would say, probably June, July of 23. He started to do a lot better, and they did suspect, and she told us this was another COVID long haul issue for him. So because he had COVID and it had drastically changed his ability to fight off illnesses, and because of the inflammation still in the body, the virus or the flu or whatever it was that he had, the body couldn't fend it off. The body did not know how to take care of it.
So now it's almost autoimmune.
Yeah. So now it's almost an autoimmune. And so we're in July of 2023. And being the advocate wife, and because I loved him so much, I started to see a few things pop back. And I had really struggled through that spring. And went to the doctor, I was not okay. I was really struggling being a caregiver, and my grief had become anger, which I think is very common with us.
Yeah.
And I didn't like myself. I didn't like that I was not sleeping. I did not like that I couldn't sleep. I've always been able to sleep. But even the smallest noises would startle me out of bed because of everything that we had experienced and everything that we were still experiencing. And so getting on some medication and then seeing a trauma therapist was pivotal in me. Mm-hmm. And I was able to change what I needed to change. And I was able to have a clearer mindset. My clarity came back where mm-hmm. I wasn't jumbled and frustrated all day long. I was able to kind of see more clearly and do things better. So when I started noticing that I saw a tremor or two, or he would say something and I was like, what was that? And then he'd repeat it and it would come out wrong the first time, but right the second time, I was like, oh gosh, like maybe this is starting to come back. Maybe I'm just super traumatized, you know? So mm-hmm. those first couple of weeks, I kind of just pushed it aside. And then my daughter came to me and she said, Mom, Dad's struggling again, but he didn't want me to tell you. And I was like, yeah, honey, I've seen it too. And so we had some pretty frank conversations and we started doing couples counseling, which was really, really good. And my goal with the counseling, my first goal was to have him make his own wellness plan, not just an illness plan. But Brian, if these things are starting to come back and your family is so tired and you are exhausted from what's happened, let's get people in our corner. Let's get doctors. Let's start going back. Let's spend the money and make sure we have a plan in place for if it does crash down on us, because it could. Mm-hmm. They never said it wouldn't, and they never said it would. Mm-hmm. But I just knew I needed help. I couldn't do it by myself. I needed a village of medical in my corner and in his corner so that it wouldn't take us that 18 months again to get back into a doctor or even 3 months. I knew that it needed to be immediately, right? So we did that, and summer was like a blur. It really was. I don't really remember a lot. I have to go back and look at my calendars and see my notes. I did kept a journal the entire time he was sick. So I do have a lot of information, you know, that my brain either blocked out or I can't remember because of the stress. But it started coming back fast. And I would say that first week of September, I got really worried again that he might be suicidal. He wasn't saying it and he wasn't talking about it. Like, we had had those very frank conversations that first part of his illness. We were very open and honest, and he would tell me how he was feeling. And when I would ask him, do you have a plan? And he would say, no, I would never do that to my mom again. You see, Brian's older brother took his life in 1989. And so Brian remembered that. He was in high school. He knew what it did to his family, his siblings, his mom, his dad. And so that's what he would tell us. And he was so convincing. I did believe him. I believed him that he wasn't that sick again until I really knew he was. And that was the week before he went missing. I canceled appointments. I would go straight home. I really tried to be there. Let's go to the doctor. I will go and sit with you until we can get into the neurologist. Let's start a different medication. Let's try a different one. They have more things now that could fit your profile. And he's like, nope, I'm not doing it. I'm fine. So it did become more contentious that last week. And I don't think there would have been another way around it, honestly, as I look back and see how things went in the timeline. I knew he wasn't well. I knew he was not telling me. I think he didn't want me to worry. He didn't want the kids to worry. So he would kind of brush it off or make a joke about what he was doing. And then one day he got up and he left and he bought a gun and he took his life. And we found him 4 days later. So when it came back fast and hard. And I know that we tried to do everything we could. We really did. And he had already made up his mind.
Yeah,
he did. And now I'm just picking up the pieces. Yeah.
Wendy, your story brings up so much emotion. I mean, I have admired you. I've watched your stories. When this all went down, it's so strange because we don't know each other in the mm-hmm. real world. And here you are, somebody that I've admired online, and I'm watching this happen, and I can feel like something really bad is, like, they're not going to find him.
Yeah.
I'm like, I just knew when you posted that.
Yeah.
I'm like, here you think you've got this perfect life and everything's going well and you've got this great...
Yeah, the internet.
Such pretty cupcakes.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. The food will fool you.
Right.
You know, it's...
Wow.
It was part of our lives, and my husband is so private.
Mm-hmm.
He was always very private about the personal things. And so my story that everyone would see would be about me and the kids and the cupcakes. He really did not like being on social media. He really didn't. He didn't care for it. So I respected him for that.
Right.
And then when he was sick, he and I talked about, you know, one day we could share your story, and I know it will bless other people's lives, especially those who are in it right now. They're right. in the trenches. I always thought it would have a different outcome when we had those conversations, though, because he was still here with us.
Right.
And now
so
he's not.
So what's inspired me about you is that you were so private, but as soon as this happened, it was not very long, and you decided to be very open about it, which I appreciate on multiple levels. For one, he took his life, and often suicide is so brushed under, or we don't speak it, or we say they lost a battle to something, or, you know, there's a lot of ways to couch it, or people just don't speak of how they died at all.
Right.
And then that's
which only
the biggest
leads
clue.
To more speculation by human nature.
Right.
Well,
right,
and there was,
in our
there
brains,
was
we need to...
There was a lot of speculation happening. But also, too, for me, I do not feel shame in saying how he passed.
Yeah.
I don't feel any regret or embarrassment sharing his story. I never had, but especially now. And I know a lot of people, even our close friends, were like, what happened? It was because he chose not to say anything at the time. But I think his story is worth sharing, and it's worth really diving into the specifics of a physical illness that then takes over your mind, and how we don't know enough about our brains. And we need to change that stigma. We need to not be afraid to share what happens. We need to not be afraid to share what the symptoms are. We need to not be afraid to say, this happened to us, and we were doing good until we weren't, and then it was too late.
Yeah. I really appreciate how honest and open and vulnerable you've been with your story online.
Thank you.
And also in the education piece. I mean, I literally reached out when you started saying COVID psychosis. I'm like, what is she talking about?
Right.
And I'm like, you know, I just didn't know what that meant at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so to have you say, Michelle, just Google it, which is crazy. Of course, why didn't I think of that?
Why not, right?
Yeah. And it has been shocking to see all of the text and medical journals that are talking about this, but we're not hearing about it in media.
No, you're not. And I think, well, one of the things that Brian found early on when he was trying to figure out what was wrong with him as well, he found an article. It's on YouTube. It was like a news article about this happy-go-lucky guy. He's a family guy, a good Christian guy. They were happily married. He got COVID, was in the hospital for a few days, came home, had all the neurological issues that Brian was having, and he took his life within just a few days of being home. And his wife had no idea of what was going on. And Brian said to me, this is exactly how I feel, Wendy. Mm-hmm. And I could see it too. I could see it too. It was just, there's not a lot of diagnosing tools. One is, after you've passed, to biopsy the brain, and you can see those proteins in the brain from COVID. And we did not get that opportunity to do that. That doesn't deter me, though, from, I'm like 99% sure this is what he had. It's just the classic case of COVID psychosis.
And actually, he suffered with it for a very long time. A lot of people don't make it as long as he did.
Right.
He had a great advocate in you.
He did. And our children stepped up. I mean, they've learned a lot more than they need to in their young lives, but they've stepped up as well and were there for him and would sit with him if I had an event or if I was at work. We really made a choice to make sure he would be okay. And I removed our gun from the home very beginning. I felt I needed to, and I did it. And I'm so glad I did, because we did have him for a lot longer than we could have.
Mm-hmm.
And for that, I'm so grateful. Because even in the hard, Michelle and Jenny, we were still able to make good memories as a family, even during his illness, even during the hard parts.
Yeah, we've got to for sure continue this conversation, because there's just so much to know about now what and what's next. As always, we want to know, how would you define resilience? in the few minutes we have today. And then when we have you come back for part two, we'll dive into what resilience continues to look like as you're swimming in the middle of it.
Yeah, because I am in the middle of it. You know, it's only been a few months since he passed. But like I said at the beginning, I'm pretty determined. In fact, I know that as I was a young child, my parents got really frustrated with me because I was so determined and I knew who I was and I knew what I wanted to do. And by golly, I was going to do it, even if you told me I couldn't. And so when I think of resilience, I think of that kind of is the definition of who I am. I have had hardships. I've had a lot of loss. I have a psoriatic arthritis. I've got an autoimmune issue. But I'm not going to let that determine what's going to happen. I am going to make sure that I can do what I want to do and I can find joy and that my children can heal and they can then find joy. And I'll remember all the fun things that we have as those memories. And so resilience to me is getting up, even when you fall down or have a bad day or spend the day in bed, you still get up the next day and you do what you need to do. And really, I feel my strength is because of the prayers we're receiving, from the help from my parents. I mean, they are rocks, and my sister and my brother. They're all close. We're very close family, and they're literally helping us along this grieving path. But also, like, I've got that genetic, that DNA in me to not give up.
Yeah, I love that about you. And, you know, the first step of resiliency is calling and naming it for what it is. And your willingness to just not feel shame and be able to speak the truth about this is beautiful.
Thank you.
And I honor you and thank you so much for coming. I'm so glad to meet you in person.
I know, finally, after all these years.
I know, and I look forward to a long friendship.
I feel the same.
I felt such a connection in our conversation, but thank you so much for being a part
of our
podcast today.
Thank you.
For sharing your story. I'm so cautious before I let people come on who experienced tragedy early on, but I really see you as taking this on as an honoring of Brian and his life and what he went through. So thank you.
Thank you
for coming.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming. And to our listeners, I promise you're going to want to stay tuned when we bring her back to continue the story. Thank you for joining us each week as we take these journeys into the real, the raw, the authentic, and the resilient. We hope you like what you've heard. We hope you'll go find us on your favorite podcast platform and give the show a like and a rating and a review. It helps us get the message out to other people who might benefit from hearing these stories of resilience and strength. If you're willing to share your story, we'd love to hear from you. You can either email us at rrpodcast@ksl.com or go find us on social media at Relentlessly Resilient on Facebook and Relentlessly Resilient Podcast on Instagram. You'll find a little button you can click to talk with Michelle for a few minutes about the story you might share, and we'd love to get you scheduled to join us on the show.
And whatever you do today, remember to be kind. You have no idea the struggles others are dealing with in their lives. Have a great day.